Welcome to The Scrap Show, a production of Recycling Today that covers the business of scrap metal recycling. We feature conversations about markets, technology, the industry's rich history, and the traditions and its ways of doing business that stay reliably familiar. Listen in as guests from across the country and around the world, processors, traders, and industry allies provide insights and observations. The Scrap Show. A conversation between friends and an industry with a rich history and a bright future.
Hello, everyone. It's Brian Taylor, Senior Editor with the Recycling Today Media Group, and welcome to The Scrap Show. As our name implies, we're here to talk about scrap recycling. Each episode, myself or another editor will find out a little more about our guest's journey through the scrap industry. Today, it's my pleasure to be speaking with Tom Byrd. Tom has been part of the scrap industry for several decades. He has worked for, during that time, several companies, including in the UK and Europe, Sims UK, Van Dalen UK, and the Shoals Recycling Chiobor Environmental Group organization being among those companies. In recent years, Recycling Today readers likely have seen his name attached to his role as president of the BIR, Bureau of International Recycling. Tom has been involved with that organization throughout his career, as was his uncle Tony Byrd before him. Just as Tom's four-year stint is, I think, about coming to an end, he has become the co-owner of two scrap facilities in the UK. It's in a part of a partnership that sounds like it will keep him busy for the foreseeable future, and I'm looking forward to finding out more about that in a little bit. But first, let's start with Tom, if you could, your origin story, as might be said in the Marvel Universe. When and how did you get your start in the scrap business?
Thanks, Brian. Well, good morning to Brian and to everyone. My family has been involved with the metal recycling industry for many years. There was a family business in the UK called the Byrd Group. And when I was a young lad, I used to work in all my school holidays and on the yards. The business was a very successful business. It was one of the largest UK metal recyclers. My father then moved to the States. I moved with him. I was at boarding school in the UK. Just traveled backwards and forwards, and Dad set up a business out there in the US. So we had very close ties with the United States. And then we moved back to the United Kingdom in the early 80s and grew the UK business. Then my father did, along with his two brothers, Tony and Brian, into one of the leading metal recyclers in not only the UK, but in Europe, with a huge reputation. And that business was then sold to Allied Steel and Wire, as it was then, ASW, in 1991. I went to work across with that business, and I ran the scrap division for Allied Steel and Wire. And then in 1995, Sims came to the UK, bought the remaining part of the family business, and Sims asked me to go back. And I worked with Sims and then grew the Sims business in the United Kingdom along with my colleagues to what it is today.
So I guess, you know, when it comes to the international or global aspects of scrap trading, that's not really anything that you've had to learn later in life. You started getting a pretty early exposure to that, it sounds like.
Very much so. I mean, you know, I was in terms of both the trading and the operational side. I mean, I was, you know, working in the yards. I went to university when I left school, so I was very fortunate. I had the practical experience of actually working in the operations, running the equipment, doing all the things that you do in operating in a scrap yard. But at the same time, then I forged with an education, so I went away to university as well. So that was a nice sort of blend.
And as your career evolved, did you spend more time on the ferrous side and the non-ferrous side, or was that also a sort of a blend?
It was mainly on the ferrous side of the business. I mean, you know, obviously, it's interesting actually, Brian, because a lot of companies can be sort of, you know, tend to be more weighted towards the ferrous than the non-ferrous. Mm-hmm. We tend to see that in our industry. They're two very, very separate businesses in terms of the way they operate. Okay. I mean, there was a strong non-ferrous element, don't forget, to the family business. But if I'm being honest, you know, my background was sort of brought up sort of more oriented towards the ferrous side of the business. And of course, things then changed as we developed the business. It changed, and we then sort of grew the non-ferrous side of the business. What I would call, you know, this sort of what I call warehouse non-ferrous side of the business, which is fundamentally dealing with all the grades. Not so much the residues from the shredders, which is a separate issue, well, that's non-ferrous, but it was more to do with actually growth, the physical side of the non-ferrous.
Okay. But on that shredder side, I mean, were shredders part of the family business?
I mean, I should say, you know, to the point, I mean, it was very interesting. Recently, I was asked by Lindemann to go out to their 100-year anniversary. And I was asked to make a presentation then, speech. And what I explained to everybody, which they didn't know, was that my family was the first family in the United Kingdom to put a shredder in. In 1967, I think it was just about, I might be wrong by a year or two, but I believe it was round about then, into St. Helens, up in the northwest, not far from the Liverpool region. We were the first business, the Berg Group was the first business to put a shredder into the UK. And then the business was very much a shredding business. It was a very strong part of the business. And that was something that my father was very knowledgeable on. And he developed that side of the business, and we put one of the largest shredders in the UK into Avonmouth initially.
Okay.
I mean, Shepherd as it was then, EMR, but Shepherd before then put the big 6,000 horsepower shredder into Liverpool, and we followed closely after with one in Avonmouth. And then, of course, at my time with Sims in the early days, when Sims bought the Allied Steel business, which I rep in the family business, we put in. The largest shredder in the UK into Newport, big 9,000 horsepower shredder in Newport. So very much a shredding background.
Okay. You mentioned the Shepherd family. Is that the same Shepherd family people who connected with EMR?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. I mean, the old Shepherd, as I said, you know, it's now we're known as EMR, but Shepherd, they put the first big, the really big shredder, the big 6,000 horsepower shredder into Liverpool.
Okay.
And they were the first ones to put the big one in, and then closely followed. We then put one over the Berg, because it was then put one in Avonmouth in 1989. I actually put that one in myself. I oversaw the installation of that machine.
So, Tom, I mentioned in the intro that you've got something pretty new and exciting that was just announced in early April. What can you tell us about the new venture?
Yes, I can. It was a business that I was looking back a little while ago, actually, Brian, and then I went with, as you mentioned, Schultz Chiho, and I spent some time there. Then I came back and I revisited it. There was a business that was, I knew the owner, a very, very good business in the eastern part of the United Kingdom in Lincolnshire. Nice operation. And I reopened discussions and looked at how I could do the deal. And I felt I was put in contact. I was introduced to someone that had ostensibly was a trading business, but also some physical, was involved in the physical market with very good links with steel mills in terms of remediation work, steel mills, and also demolition. We had a discussion, and I thought that, you know, I could use it as a vehicle to acquire this other business. We needed some help with that. It was quite a complex deal. I then brought in an advisory firm to advise on how we could actually structure the deal. They introduced us to a private equity sort of a private equity company, not in the true sense of the term, but they are a firm called Harwood Private Capital, very, very good firm. And we introduced them to the business as well, and they liked the business. And so we then together acquired the business. And I've obviously invested in the business along with my partner, who was the business that I mentioned that I used as the vehicle, and Harwood Private Capital. So we're very excited about it. So it's a business that's going to be a platform for growth going forward. So we have a very strong trading and also a very strong processing business. And the two complement one another very, very well.
Okay.
With my background in the industry as well. It's a young team, very, very competent team. I'm very excited about the future. So we're looking forward to it.
What kind of processing equipment is in place?
We have two shredders. We have a non-ferrous separation and dense media separation plant. We have shearing operations. We have non-ferrous operation. We have a main processing yard, two feeder yards. And then we have our trading office. And we're also, as I said, it's a platform for further growth, and we're looking forward to expand the business. There is certainly, you know, when you take a look at what's happening with the future of the industry, you know, metal recycling, and certainly the products that we produce are going to be absolutely vital for the future. So, you know, I'm very excited about what lies ahead.
Okay. I think a lot of our readers and listeners in this case, of course, are in North America, and they're familiar with what grades are export grades and what grades tend to stay close to home. And when I look at UK statistics, I see it's a place where a lot of scrap does travel internationally. What can you tell us about the, you know, what's likely to be exported from your new company?
Yes, I'm in the company is very export oriented. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got a very, very sort of significant container infrastructure that it uses. Obviously, it produces a lot of Zorba, because not only, well, when I mentioned that we actually produce the shredders, it also has, as I said, a dense media plant, which also takes in residue materials and processes Zorba. We also have a polishing plant, I should add there as well. So the business is very much oriented towards non-ferrous exports, Zorba exports, and also shredded exports. So the business already exports that way. In terms of, you know, the UK, it's an interesting one. You're right, because the UK now is really a strong exporter. And when you look at the UK, the actual consumption of scrap within the UK, particularly over recent years, has fallen off quite considerably. I mean, we've got the Liberty acquisition of the old Rotherham works from Tata. Right. And that really, I mean, it's very difficult to sort of understand what is going on there in terms of in production. It's been very stop-start, very difficult to get any kind of continuity there. And I think they're buying small quantities of material. But I don't think they're doing a great deal there. And I think the Liberty story is something that's going to continue to be news until we actually know what's going to happen with that business. So, you know, that was a huge consumer of scrap, which it doesn't anymore. And then we have the Celsa business in South Wales, which is the Spanish, which is the main consumer of scrap. So really, that's the one we've heard about. We've heard about, you know, the British Steel in Scunthorpe, what's happening there. And we're hearing, again, uncertainty over that going forward in terms of what it's buying and what it's likely to buy again, sort of in and out of the market. So the UK has become very much an export-oriented market, certainly over recent years. And, you know, that seems to be set to continue, I would say, certainly in the foreseeable future.
So this seems like a natural time to talk about the BIR, because the BIR, when folks get together there, they're often talking about cross-border trading. When did you get started in BIR? And can you kind of tell us about the steps you've taken to make it all the way to present?
Goodness me. Yeah, I mean, I've been involved with BIR. Let me think. My first BIR was literally, I was thinking the other day, actually, Brian, my first BIR was the Singapore BIR. That was in 1990. So I'm going back, goodness, 33 years ago. And that was the week before I got married.
Okay.
that was my first BIR. And I've been regularly going to BIR since then, really. And I've always, as you know, Tony, my uncle, was involved with it. But, I mean, I sort of could see the importance of the trade organization and what it actually stood for. And I sort of attended regularly. I got involved with the Ferris Board. And I was an active participant on that. I headed up the Ferris Board for a while. I then, you know, was treasurer of the organisation, and then from treasurer I became president. But I've always sort of been actively involved in the organisation. Don't forget as well that, you know, the European Ferrous Recovery, EFR as it was called, was I suppose best described as a daughter organisation of and that represented the European ferrous industry. And I was president of that as well. So I was involved both at the European level within BIR. Then, of course, URIC was formed and EFR formed part of that, and then URIC and so on. So it's more of a separate organization now, but it's a member of BIR separately. But at one time, EFR and Eurometric, which was a non-ferrous federation for Europe, was part of BIR, or sort of operated under the auspices of BIR. So I was president of that actively for a number of years. So I've always been involved with BIR and the organisation, and sort of, you know, with the time spent and dedication to it, you know, I found myself asked to be president, and I was duly elected, which is now, as you quite rightly said at the outset of this discussion, is coming up for me standing down in Amsterdam. So it's my last BIR as president, but I will remain on the board for the next 4 years as well as past president. So I'll still very much intend, and I will also, should add, be taking over as president from Ranjit Baxi. I'll be taking over as president of the Global Recycling Foundation.
It's
something that was set up, so the president of BIR then moves into that position, and I you know, I'll still look to remain actively involved with the industry at the BIR level.
I see. Okay, congratulations. Your 4 years as president came with quite the legislative, storyline, I guess, if you're an editor, but headache if you're not, if you're a trader. That involved, Brussels seemingly wanting to start a system of scrap trading with non-OECD countries. It's Basel Convention related, and it seems to be poised to make life difficult, certainly for recyclers in Europe and I guess the UK. I mean, what kind of update can you give us on where that stands?
Look, I mean, I think at the moment it's something that, you know, that I've been very, very vocal about on this, and my position is very clear that, you know, this is, goodness knows how many times I've sort of been saying this, and we're going to keep saying it, is that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that this whole issue of export restrictions is around backdoor protectionism, Brian. It is, you know, we must maintain free trade within our industry. And this has been introduced on the basis that, as we know, that there is a drive for a carbon reduction, rightly so. And the steel mills are saying that, you know, this is material that is emanating from the European continent and therefore should remain in the European continent. And it shouldn't be exported to countries where the environmental standards do not match European standards or health and safety standards, you know, depending on, you know, whichever suits them to use as the benchmark for restricting the exports. But the fact of the matter is that the circular economy is global. It's not something that's regional. Right. And, you know, it's, and if we are here now talking about global emissions or carbon emissions, I should say, on a global basis, and we're pointing the finger at other parts of the world for not falling in line with the emissions that they and reducing them, then how can we possibly turn around and say, well, we want you to reduce your emissions, but we're not going to supply you with the material to allow you to do so? And so it goes on. And for me, it's something, but it's all around free trade. It's vitally important. And as simple as this, Brian, that if we curtail exports artificially, we put barriers to those exports, which is going to impact upon prices, impact upon the economic viability of the industry, then that's going to have a huge impact upon recycling rates, because it becomes then uneconomical to collect the material, uneconomical to process the material into furnace feed raw materials. And so you're actually shooting yourself in the foot, for use of a better term, using these restrictions, and you're going to have a much bigger environmental problem if you can't process the material that needs to be recycled. So, you know, and again, you know, it's the other thing. It's all around waste, and I know we've been harping on about this and beating the drum. We'll continue to do so. And our friends in America have done a much better job at eliminating the word waste in terms of its description of the products that we produce. Mm-hmm. You know, we still have the word waste used in terminology for our material. Now, you know, we don't produce waste. It's as simple as that. I mean, how can you possibly say that a container load of bright wire going out to Southeast Asia is waste? How can you say that? How can you say that a 25,000 ton cargo load of prime plate structural material being shipped down to Southeast Asia is waste? It's an utter nonsense. And I think this is part of the problem where it's a one size fits all. And I'm afraid it doesn't work with our industry. A one size fits all of waste is plain bonkers. I think that's the best way of referring to it.
Right.
But anyway, it's something that we're going to continue to push back on, continue to fight, and continue to push the argument. And we must maintain free trade. It's vitally important for the industry.
Sure. Yes. And that's, you know, it's been a consistent message from BIR, and unfortunately, it seems like it's never been more important than right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for me, during this period, it's sort of, you know, couple that with the pandemic, which was in itself a challenge, and then this legislation. It's been a very interesting BIR. But you know, that's what we do. I think it's also shown people the importance of BIR. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that, you know, over the years, as I've said, many have just looked at BIR as two conferences a year where they can then meet their colleagues and do what they do. But it's very much more than that. And I think people realize that now, that the huge amount of advocacy work that's done by the Brussels team behind the scenes is massively important to the industry. And I think the one good thing that's come out of the last 4 years of my presidency, which has been sort of impacted by COVID and now the introduction of this legislation, is that people have actually seen, you know, how much work BAR does. And, you know, our membership is at record levels and people can appreciate the, you know, the good work that's being done. So in one sense, Brian, although it's been challenging, it's been extremely enjoyable and rewarding. And I think it's also been, dare I say it, you know, good for BAR, because it's actually stressed the importance of it more than more so than if we hadn't have had these challenges.
Well, to put on maybe, I don't know if this is a later topic, I think it kind of is, but if you could look back on your 40-ish, I guess I'll say, years in the industry, plus your years even before you were officially a full-time payroll person, what are some things that have changed that you'd look back on and say, wow, that was, that was how we did things 30 years ago, 40 years ago. I've almost forgotten because it's done differently now. What would be a couple things in that category?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think we've got to be careful because sometimes we can look back at the past through rose-coloured spectacles, can't we? We can look at things. But I think that, you know, I guess that, you know, the industry has changed in many ways. I mean, it's much more professional now in how it's operating. I think the image of the industry has changed as well, much more than in a positive sense. I think there were certain stereotypes we had towards the sector. I think those are now changing. I think one of the things that's always very important with our sector is that, you know, and I mentioned it when I was at ISRI, is that, you know, your word is your bond. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those where, you know, if you have a deal with someone, you shake their hand, it's a deal and it's done. I mean, that still is there and it's such an important part of it. But, you know, now when we do contracts, it's looked up by 100 lawyers and you go through things with a tooth comb to make sure. But nevertheless, I think that there is that bond within the industry that still exists today. And it's an industry that is always changing, very vibrant. I think what we've got to do going forward, I think there's been consolidation over the years. I mean, I've seen so many family businesses, you know, names that are now part of much bigger organizations as the consolidation has taken place. And a lot of characters and owner-operators that are no longer in the industry and unfortunately no longer with us.
Okay.
That I've seen those changes. And so I look back on that and I remember, so I've got to that years now that I look back and I remember all those things. But I look at the industry today and I'm very, very optimistic about it. Hugely. I mean, I wouldn't be investing in a business at my time in my career if I didn't think that there was a really great future. And I genuinely do. I think with what we're looking at with the environmental side of the business.
Okay.
I've often said, you know, we were green long before it was fashionable. With the importance of the raw materials that we produce for both the smelting and steelmaking sectors, you know, we are going to be, you know, we're going to be instrumental in managing climate change and improving the environment. And we tick all those boxes. But what we've got to do now is educate people what we do. I think we've been a little bit, how can I put it, slow at coming to the table on that. We've been happy to keep our heads down a bit as an industry, as I said, you know, family businesses before.
Right.
Keep everything very much, keep your head down, don't let anybody tell we get on with it. But I think now we've got to start telling people what we do. And, you know, you just take a look at LinkedIn and social media. All the big companies are out there pushing their ESG parts of their business. And, you know, environment, social and governance and really making a point of that. And I think that's something that we have to do as an industry. And it's only going to help our cause going forward.
Right. One aspect of that I wonder about, and I tend to ask, you know, industry veterans, is the recruiting or hiring aspect. I think, you know, as you personally or as other business owners, you know, try to attract young talent. Do you see that whole green sustainability aspect as being something that's going to have to be, you know, put front and center?
I do. I mean, I would say to any young person coming into this business, my goodness me, what an industry to join. Think about it. I mean, it does everything. It's a trading business. It's a logistics business. It's an operating business. It's an environmental business. It's a sustainable business. It does everything. I mean, it is, you know, if you're a young person now and you want to go into a business that is looking, that ticks all the boxes, and I use that expression, forgive me for using it again, but it does. I mean, you know, you want to learn how to trade, you know, you want to learn how to, on the logistical side of things, or, you know, operating, you know, recycling, maximum value, and value-added products, sustainability, and you really you want a job that's going to be diverse and interesting and ever-changing and right on the forefront of what we're looking at. What better business? You know, commodity trade, all that good stuff. I mean, it's an exciting industry. I'm as enthusiastic about our sector as I've always been. And for a young guy or woman, you know, young man, a young woman that wants to come out and find a sector and an industry that's going to be rewarding, what better industry than the metal recycling business? I can't think of a better one.
Very good. And plus, you get to see cars and trucks, you know, chewed up and spit out.
Absolutely. So
that's not a bad thing.
Absolutely. And it's an international business as well. You know,
yes.
It's very much an international business, and that's what I love about it. I mean, I remember when in the early days when we put our operation into Avonmouth when it was the Bird Group before it was sold before the family business was sold. And I remember going down to Turkey in the early days and meeting steel mills for the first time, and actually sort of, you know, pioneering as it were then on exports back in the late 80s. It was just so exciting, and nothing's changed. It's great. Nothing's changed. It's still, there's nothing more rewarding than when you've sort of made a good sale of a big cargo of material and you see it being loaded and going out. It's just, it's a great feeling. And that buzz has never left me.
You put forth a lot of good arguments as to why a young person would want to join this industry. What about a piece of advice or one or two pieces of advice to somebody? You've hired someone, he or she is about 24 and they're about to start learning the business and interacting with people, perhaps internationally. Do you have one or two pieces of advice or guidance you would give that new hire?
Oh, goodness me. I mean, look, it's a people business, all right? So, you know, I mean, somebody once said it's about doing the hard yards, Brian. You know, get out there around the customers, understand the business, understand what's going on in the operations. I always say to people that, you know, I'm very keen for all of my office-based staff to spend time understanding what the challenges are in an operation. And so, you know, even if you're a trader and you're in an office, go out and see and have a look around the yards, go and visit the yards, visit the customers, visit the suppliers.
Okay.
And get to understand their needs as well. You know, don't sit yourself in an office, get out and about and understand the business, do the hard yards. You know, once you've sort of agreed something with somebody, stick to it.
And that brings us the whole people aspect of it. Brings us back a little bit to BIR. So, I mean, do you intend to encourage your colleagues at your new venture to be involved in associations overall and BIR included?
Look, very much so. And the reason I say that is quite simply this, is that, you know, if no matter how successful and how big your business is, your company, your private company is, you always have more gravitas when you're part of an association, a trade association that represents an industry. So, you know, when you are pushing back on legislative issues, when you're pushing back on other issues, it's so important to be part of an organization that represents an industry. So rather than just an individual business. So I'd always encourage people to get involved and get young people to get involved with the business, with the industry, with BIR and their national organizations, because, you know, it keeps you much closer to what is going on. It also opens doors and it introduces you to other companies that are in the sector. But also, more importantly, you're stronger, you know, collectively than you are individually. And I think that's so important. So I would always encourage people to play an active role in both their national and of international associations.
And Tom, what's the name of the businesses now in the UK for folks who also may want to reach out and say, I want to buy some scrap from you?
We're in the process of rebranding. So there will be a rebrand that will be coming out in the very near future. But as we are at the moment, it's KJB, KJB Consulting, and it's the former Peterborough Metal Recycling, otherwise known as BW Riddle business, that we bought. Okay. So it's a well-known business. A lot of our international customers will know exactly who we are. But we'll, as I said, Brian, we'll be rebranding. We're in the process of rebranding as we speak, and that will be hopefully coming to market in the very near future.
Okay, and the facilities are in what county or what region of the UK?
The facilities, we have three facilities, operational facilities. The head office is in Sheffield. We operate we use docks out of Hartlepool and Middlesbrough for that business. And then we have physical processing yards in Bourne, in Lincolnshire, Peterborough, and Boston.
Okay, terrific. Well, Tom, thank you very much for your time. Folks, you've been listening to The Scrap Show, and our guest was Tom Bird. He has been for 4 years president of BIR. He is a scrap industry veteran, and he's now, once again, pretty deeply involved in the United Kingdom's scrap industry. Tom, thank you very much for your time today.
Pleasure, Brian. Thank you very much.